Welcome to the KPMG Financial Reporting Podcast. This time focused on themes and recent developments related to the Securities and Exchange Commission. Listen to KPMG professionals discuss key points on these important areas.
Hello, I'm Karen Silverman, a partner at KPMG, and in this episode, I'm visiting with several of my fellow partners in the firm's Department of Professional Practice, who monitor trends and developments at the SEC. Joining me today are Timothy Brown, Aaron McCloskey, and Rob Werling. KPMG recently hosted a webcast on this topic, so today we plan to recap some of that content, as well as cover some more detail and touch on some of the frequently asked questions we received during the webcast. KPMG has also published a number of resources on these various topics, each of which are available on the website at frv.kpmg.us in the SEC Matters section. One topic that is typically on the minds of public companies is trends in SEC comment letters. Understanding these trends can be helpful for companies as they evaluate their own disclosures to make sure they are in compliance with GAAP and SEC guidance. Tim, can you kick it off today by taking us through the top trends we are currently seeing in comment letters?
Sure, Karen, and thanks for having us on today. I'm happy to dive in here. You're correct that the comment trends of the past can serve as a good barometer of what might be coming in the near term. Perhaps that's the most true for our top three comment areas, which have each maintained a spot in the top three for some time now: MD&A, non-GAAP measures, and revenue recognition.
So let me get this straight. These items haven't left the top three in recent years?
That's right, Karen. When we take each separately, it may provide some insight as to why. Let's start at the top with MD&A. This is a broad-reaching category with a number of subcomponents. This is a big driver of why so many letters relate to MD&A. Comments are generated in results of operations, liquidity and capital resources, critical accounting policies and estimates, and other areas. Frequently, the staff is looking for additional detailed disclosures to learn more about a particular impact to a company. In particular, this past year, we saw more in the way of requests for additional disclosures in liquidity and capital resources relating to the impacts from the pandemic. The staff has stated that long-term impacts, in addition to short-term impacts, should be discussed. This coming year, I could see more comments generated by the amendments to MD&A, which I think we're going to touch upon shortly.
Really interesting. Okay, so what about non-GAAP? Hasn't the staff gotten the message out at this point?
You're right. Well, in a way. So there isn't anything new in the way of guidance on non-GAAP. Everything that has been out there for the last few years still stands. The staff has stated, though, that they continue to see companies running afoul of their guidelines. And as such, it continues to be an area of focus. To be clear, this is one of the tougher areas to assess. The staff has been focused on tailored accounting principles and continues to look at company, even industry disclosure, in light of their guidance. Of late, we've seen a burgeoning focus on segment disclosures and non-GAAP measures included within those. Also, the staff has made comments that revenue is quote-unquote special. So they are focusing on non-GAAP measures titled adjusted revenue or net revenue and other similar items. They've made statements recently that companies should consider whether these measures might be better reconciled to a margin, if they're even appropriate at all.
So it sounds like there's still a lot going on there. You mentioned non-GAAP revenue, but what about GAAP revenue? ASC 606 has been out for some time now.
That's true. We still are seeing comments on revenue in larger numbers. Particularly, the staff is focused on incomplete disclosures or is asking for more robust disclosures. Remember that ASC 606 is a disclosure-focused standard, and the SEC continues its own focus in that area. As is true for all the areas we've discussed, the SEC also looks at other information a company has out in the public purview. So, to the extent that information provided elsewhere is inconsistent with a disclosure, or may provide more information not included in the notes, the staff may request that information be expanded upon or included.
Thanks, Tim. It's definitely helpful to hear where the SEC has been focused in their recent reviews. Perhaps just as relevant, or possibly more so, are the future expected trends. Aaron, do we have any insight or projections of future trends in comment letters? Where do we think the SEC is going to focus their attention?
Yeah, so we do expect the SEC to question companies on matters that I'm going to categorize into three main disclosure areas. So we've got COVID-19, we've got the new and amended rules and regulations, and then the third being evolving or emerging issues. So the first area is no surprise, right? So we do expect that the SEC will focus their filing reviews in 2021 on disclosures about COVID-19. And more specifically, we do expect that the SEC will question companies about the adequacy of their discussion on the current and the expected impact of COVID-19 on the company's business, its operating results, its liquidity, and capital resources. And so in this area, we do recommend that companies revisit disclosure guidance topics 9 and 9A that the SEC issued back in 2020 and use this guidance as a roadmap when they're preparing COVID-19 disclosures in upcoming filings as the pandemic does continue on. I did also want to mention that also on the COVID front, we do expect the SEC to focus on non-GAAP measures with COVID-specific adjustments. And to build on Tim's comments about non-GAAP, the SEC's existing rules and regulations do continue to apply here, and there have not been any exceptions made or revisions to those existing requirements in light of the pandemic. So that essentially means that before disclosing a non-GAAP measure adjusted for COVID-specific impacts, companies really should be considering whether or not such a measure continues or does apply with these rules as well as the staff guidance that's been issued in that area.
Well, COVID-19 is certainly a hot topic, and it sounds like the disclosures could be impacted in a variety of different areas within the SEC filings. You mentioned a second item related to amendments to regulations. What do we think the SEC is going to focus on there?
Yes, we do also anticipate that there will be a focus on the adoption and compliance with the numerous rules that amended Regulation SX and Regulation SK. So to break this down a little bit, this is going to include the amendments to disclosures about acquisitions and dispositions of a business. So think Rules 305, 314, as well as Article 11 on pro forma financial information. These rules were effective back on January 1st of 2021. And so other amendments to Regulation SK, that's going to include those that governed financial disclosure requirements for registered debt offerings. And that specifically is Rules 310, 316, and new Rules 1301 and 1302. And those rules were effective back on January 4th. And then in terms of amendments to Regulation SK, so that's going to include those that modernize disclosures about description of business, legal proceedings, and risk factors. And these are also known as Items 101, 103, and 105. And then another set of rules on Regulation SK, or that amended Regulation SK, so there were amendments to the requirements for MD&A, supplemental information, and selected financial data. And so companies will really want to ensure that they are complying with these new rules as applicable for the respective mandatory compliance dates. So something to be on the lookout there.
Very interesting. Finally, what about emerging issues?
Yeah, so we also expect the SEC to focus on disclosures about evolving or emerging issues. So again, this is going to be cybersecurity, LIBOR, and Brexit. These continue to be top of mind for the SEC, and comments in these areas have been and are expected to continue to focus on compliance with the SEC's respective disclosure guidance. Particularly, the SEC has stressed the importance that companies disclose the risks related to these matters and make sure that the disclosures are not boilerplate and generic, but rather tailored to the specific circumstances of the company. And so I recommend revisiting the cybersecurity guidance that the SEC issued back in February of 2018 and the guidance on reference rate reform, or the transition from LIBOR, that they issued back in July of 2019. And then as it relates to Brexit, since the UK has left the EU at this point, companies should be discussing the impact that Brexit has had or will have on its operations going forward. And then just one disclaimer I wanted to make here, that there may be other areas that the SEC will focus on, such as the adoption of new accounting standards like in recent years, but we did just want to highlight these three areas as we think that they will be the key focus areas of the SEC in the coming year.
Thanks, Aaron. I'm sure many companies appreciate a preview of anticipated areas of focus. I'd like to talk further about the amendments to Regulation SK you mentioned in that discussion, specifically items 101, 103, and 105. Can you give us some more color on those amendments?
Yes, certainly. So in August of 2020, the SEC had adopted the rule amendments to Reg SK items 101, 103, and 105. And the intent of these amendments was not only to modernize the requirements, but also to prompt tailored and improved disclosures in order to provide a better understanding about each company's business and its financial condition. And so as companies are preparing these disclosures, they really should keep in mind that the information should be presented in a way that is consistent with the lens that management and the board of directors use to manage and assess the company's performance. And to give you a bit of flavor of the changes, the revisions to item 101, which is description of business, and item 105, risk factors, that those changes were really to emphasize a more principles-based approach. And by having this more principles and flexible approach, it also focuses companies to provide disclosures only to the extent that the information is material to their business. And the most prominent change to item 101 is the new requirement to include human capital disclosures. And this is going to require companies to disclose any human capital measures or objectives to the extent that they are material that management focuses on when they are managing the business. And then in terms of amendments to risk factors, now companies are going to be required to provide a no more than 2-page summary risk factor disclosure if their total risk factor discussion is exceeding 15 pages. And then the final rules also update the requirements of disclosing the most significant factors to requiring disclosures of material factors. Here again, we are seeing that focus on materiality. And then to briefly touch on amendments to legal proceedings, the amendments to that item continue to follow a more prescriptive approach. And an example of the change here is there has been an increase to the threshold required for disclosure of environmental proceedings that the government is party. It increases that threshold from $100,000 to $300,000. But it also has a caveat that the amendments will provide a registrant some flexibility to select a different threshold if certain conditions are adhered to. And the final point or example of maybe legal proceedings here is that the rule does also allow for the use of hyperlinks or cross-referencing to disclosures about legal proceedings that are located elsewhere in the document. And the intent there is to cut down on repetitiveness. And so these rules are going to be effective, or were effective, I should say, for filings on or after November 9th, 2020. And I do also want to briefly mention that the SEC did issue guidance to assist companies with transition to these new requirements. And this transition guidance is in the form of FAQs, or frequently asked questions. And the intent is to clarify when compliance is required for certain registration statements and Form 10Ks. And just to mention one of them that I think is worth highlighting for the group, for our audience here, is that there is one that mentions or clarifies that a registrant is not required to comply with an amended items 101 and 103 if it does file or has filed on or after November 9th a prospectus supplement that to an already effective Form S-3 registration statement. And that is a Form S-3 that went effective before November 9th of 2020. There are two other FAQs that are very short, so I do recommend taking a read of those as you're preparing for the upcoming season.
Great. Thanks, Aaron. That context is extremely helpful as we discuss further. One item you mentioned that I want to follow up on is human capital disclosures. Tim, the media has been buzzing about this topic. Can you help us understand why this is such a hot topic?
Karen, you're absolutely right. And I think this is going to be an evolving area in the near term. There's a few reasons for that view. One is that we have a new administration, a change in control of Congress, and therefore a new commission as well. The SEC will have a Democrat-leaning majority, and in statements made by the two Democrat commissioners, they thought the rules as amended didn't go far enough. The second and more near-term reason is that these rules were written as principles-based disclosures. So as Aaron was talking about just a couple of minutes ago, companies have discretion as to what they disclose, based on what's material to their business. Now, the SEC staff has said that they think the disclosures will be material to most businesses. But for that reason, we've also heard that certain companies are carefully considering what they're disclosing. As the disclosure implies, that information that's disclosed is material. So far, and it's early days on this, we've seen a great deal more in the way of qualitative disclosure than quantitative. If we do see more disclosure requirements implemented by a new commission, I suspect that may change in time as well.
Thanks, Tim. I'll be really interested to see how those disclosures develop over time. I also want to spend some time talking about items 301, 302, and 303 in the related amendments. Rob, could you give us some background on what those items are and the impact of the amendment?
Sure. As Aaron mentioned, this was yet another set of amendments to Regulation SK. In this case, they were voted on by the SEC in November. And as you mentioned, once again, we had three items amended. So maybe I'll just talk through those each briefly. The first two were really just streamlining certain financial disclosures that were in a lot of cases providing information that is readily available or at least accessible elsewhere. The first of those was the amendment to eliminate item 301, which was the historical requirement to provide that 5 years of selected financial data in a table. The second then was item 302, and under the existing rules there, it required the disclosure of quarterly financial information in the annual financial statements, again, in a table for the most recent 8 quarters or the past 2 years. That requirement wasn't fully eliminated, but it was amended to move to a more principles-based requirement that only requires that information to be provided when there has been what's referred to as a material retrospective change to any of those quarters in that past 2 years. So that could be something like a significant discontinued operation or another accounting principle change that is applied retrospectively. The third item, though, was amendments made to MD&A. That's obviously a much broader topic and covered in item 303 within Regulation SK.
So I'm hearing a bit of a theme here that it seems that many of the amendments are moving to a more principles-based framework.
That's right, Karen. And that theme very much holds true as we look at the amendments to MD&A. While at the same time, they eliminated some of those more prescriptive requirements that could at times lead to lengthy or boilerplate types of discussion that were often duplicative of information that was already provided in other parts of the document, as opposed to producing a more focused and tailored discussion of information that's viewed as more relevant. One of the cornerstones of those amendments was the addition of a defined set of objectives of MD&A that starts out the set of requirements. Those objectives, in summary, aim to focus the disclosures in MD&A on information that is, first of all, material, but they also emphasize the importance of not only recent trends, but also a discussion about the future prospects of the company. And then ultimately, as Aaron had discussed with some of the other amendments to Regulation SK, really try to provide investors with the ability to view the company from management's perspective, or through the eyes of management is the phrase that's often used. As an example of that, instead of the historical requirement to simply provide a table with all contractual obligations, the amended rules instead incorporate a more principles-based requirement to disclose and discuss material cash requirements as a part of an enhanced liquidity and capital resources discussion. So really, again, trying to get back to those framing objectives that are designed to provide a more tailored and thoughtful MD&A as opposed to just a repetition of tables and prescriptive requirements.
Thanks again, Rob. And remind me, when do these amendments go into effect?
Sure. So these rules just very recently became effective on February 10th, actually. However, maybe working from the end first, mandatory compliance with all of the amended items does not actually become required until the first fiscal year that ends on or after August 9th of this year, August 9th, 2021. So for a calendar year-end company, that would apply to the Form 10-K filed in early 2022 for the year ending December 31st of 2021. However, many companies were certainly interested in the ability to early adopt some of these requirements and amendments, and that is allowed beginning after that recent effective date of February 10th. So again, for any filings that are made after February 10th, companies can early adopt those amendments for any individual item in its entirety. And those items, again, are at that level of item 301, 302, and 303. So while item 301, as an example, is fairly isolated, a company could adopt that item by just no longer including the five-year selected financial data table a little more easily right away. For items like 303, a company would have to adopt all aspects of those MD&A amendments, not just individual components within. So for example, only eliminating the contractual obligations table would not be allowed unless all of the other aspects of those amendments were applied as well.
Great. And I know we had a few questions on this on the webcast, but do these amendments apply just to annual filings like Form 10-K, or do they also apply to the quarterly filings like Form 10-Qs?
That's correct. So while we often think, or at least I often think and talk about these first in the context of a Form 10-K, the amendments do absolutely apply to interim filings as well, like Form 10-Qs. In fact, there are specific MD&A requirements within Item 303 for those quarterly filings. And there were even some amendments made to those components of Item 303 as well. Again, focused on providing more flexibility, seeking that tailored and more meaningful discussion. As one example of that, the amendments to that interim component of MD&A provide now the option to compare and discuss the most recent quarter with either the same quarter in the prior year, which was the existing requirement, or the immediately preceding quarter now, which again provides more flexibility to discuss information that might be more meaningful and useful for an investor or a user of the financial statements.
Rob, that was a great summary and very helpful. Thank you. As we think about changes to the SEC regulations, I have to imagine a new presidential administration can also result in changes. Tim, can you talk to us about what we are seeing now that we have a new president and his related appointees and priorities?
So where we stand is that we have President Biden's nominee, Gary Gensler. Mr. Gensler is currently a professor at MIT, interestingly, very involved in blockchain, and formerly was the chair of the CFTC. He's known for having taken a hardline stance against large banks during his time in that role, and is seen as someone that would further enforcement actions at the commission. As we're all aware, there's a lot happening in Washington, and with the cabinet confirmation hearings backlogged, and an impeachment trial as well, there currently is no date set for Mr. Gensler's confirmation hearing. Meanwhile, Allison Lee has been named acting chair of the SEC that has four commissioners, divided 2-2 along party lines. We've seen some movement on new acting directors being named, including Paul Munter as acting chief accountant and John Coates as acting director of the Division of Corporation Finance. Ms. Lee has appointed an executive staff and named the first ever senior policy advisor for climate and ESG. My take is that this appointment shows us on the policy shows us more about the policy initiatives that will be important at the SEC in this commission.
Thanks for those insights, Tim. I guess we'll continue to stay tuned for updates. As the SEC regulations are changing, I know we have a variety of resources that our listeners can access to stay up to date. Erin, could you just highlight a few of those for us?
Yeah, exactly, Karen. So we do continue to monitor the activities and developments at the SEC. And to the extent that there are matters of importance, we plan to provide highlights during KPMG's CFO Financial Forum webcast that is held quarterly. And the next one is being held on March 23rd, as well as depending on the nature or extent of the SEC's activities, again, whether it's rulemaking, statements of the chairperson or commissioners, or even staff guidance, we may also release podcasts such as this or hold separate webcasts to discuss the recent events. So certainly be on the lookout for these by joining our mailing list or monitoring our Financial Reporting View webpage. And there you will be able to register and join us for webcasts to stay up to date with the SEC.
Wonderful. Tim, Erin, and Rob, I really appreciate you taking the time to go through these topics today. Changes to the SEC regulations have meaningful implications for public companies, and I know I found it very helpful to have some more context around the recent changes. As Erin highlighted, this is just a small taste of the content available should you want more information on SEC developments. And perhaps we'll consider making this a recurring topic for our podcast as we see future developments.
Karen, I think that's a great idea. We'll look forward to doing this again with you soon.
Great, Tim. Thank you again to our guests for their thoughtful and insightful comments, and we'll look forward to chatting with you again soon.
Thank you for listening to the KPMG Financial Reporting Podcast. For additional information on the trends and developments at the SEC, please go to our website, frv.kpmg.us. Stay safe and stay tuned for more on this and other important topics.